Hey, this is Howard Phillips, and you're listening to Video Game Bullshit.
Hi, this is Martial Art Master Daniel Pacina. You know me as Johnny Cage, Scorpion, Sub-Zero, Reptile, and Smoke. You are tuning in to Video Game Bullshit, and if you're not, finish him. So get over here.
Welcome to episode 119 of Video Game Bullshit. It has been a while, but unintentionally.
Yes, it has.
Holy crap, man. We have nonstop been playing tag for the last, like, few...
It's like 3 weeks, maybe. 3 weeks. It feels like longer, honestly.
Yeah, we wanted to record the week after the 118, and we were like... Yeah. I think you got sick, and then I got sick. Conventions and then birthdays and family visiting. And
yeah, dude.
Like, dude. Yeah, so I think it was the first week you were sick.
Yeah, and I had, like, I completely lost my voice. Like, the day that we wanted to record, I had no voice.
Yeah. And then the week after that, my nephew was in town visiting Hawaii. Yeah. So, like, I was out of the loop. Like, we were in Waikiki. Sprained my ankle while I was out there. So I was immobile.
What, yeah, like hiking or something?
My ankle was
huge. Oh, yeah, you showed me that picture. Oh, gosh, that looked gnarly, dude.
So the real reason, which is funnier than, like, hiking or anything else, is we were walking in downtown Waikiki, and my wife was arguing where the bar was, the Tiki's bar was. And I was like, oh, no, it's, like, blocks this way. And I went to look at my phone, missed a step, and landed right on my ankle.
Ah, dude.
Yeah, dude, it hurts so bad. And I still had to walk around a mile. It's still, like, a little bit tender, but it's pretty much fully healed at this point. It's been a couple weeks. So Waikiki was crazy. That was fun, though. So I did that with my nephew and niece. And then the week after, I got sick.
Yep, and then immediately after you got sick, I went to Portland Retro Gaming Expo. So we couldn't record that weekend because I was out of pocket and, you know,
and
repping premium.
And here we are. And
here we are.
The thing is that throughout the times, too, between us being sick and everything, we tried to record, like, when I get out of work. But I get out of work at, like, 6 p.m. Hawaiian time, which is what time? Nebraska time? Like, midnight?
Yeah, it's almost midnight. And you know, I'm old. We're both 42 now, by the way. We both had birthdays since.
We both had birthdays.
Yeah.
What is the coolest birthday gift you got, Tristan?
Oh, coolest birthday gift. I would have to say, oh gosh, I'm kind of blanking right now. I'll say the most random birthday gift. I got a Laserdisc copy of Naked Gun 3 and 33 and a third or whatever it's called.
Wild.
Yeah, random.
So the most random thing that I got, since we're going to go random, is you know, my second mom, Kyle's mom, sent me a little gift package, and there were 3 G.I. Joe manuals that are, like, Cobra, G.I. Joe, and another one. And it actually has, like, Army ranks in the G.I. Joe one and Cobra ranks in the Cobra one. It's like a little little guides to the rank and the structure of those ones. And she sent me a signed picture of Sabu. The wrestler, Sabu.
Oh, yeah.
And the ticket stub from the very first show that Kyle and I went to in 2003.
That's cool.
Where we got that signature at from Sabu. That was pretty rad. So she sent that. She has, like, so many, like, little treasures and treats. And she
was it, like, a house show or something like that? Or
The Hammond Civic Center in Indiana, Hammond, Indiana, with IWA Mid-South.
There you
go.
So,
IWA Mid-South had CM Punk as the champion around that time. A little bit after that show, CM Punk won the title back in the day. This is way before he blew up. And it was ran by a wrestler, Ian Rotten, from ECW fame. If you Google IWA Mid-South or Ian Rotten now, though, he has had such a bad reputation of not paying people and being like Barney. And then there's like some of his wrestlers were like on Jerry Springer and crazy shit back. It's really wild if you go down the IWA Mid-South rabbit hole. It's fun. But yeah, back in the day,
wrestling.
back in the day, those shows were really, really cool, because that was the Chicago spot, was the Hammond Civic Center. It was on a basketball court with a felt or carpet basketball, like in a high school gymnasium.
Yeah. Oh no, I know exactly what you're talking about. I've been in a few of those, and a few wrestling house shows like that too. In fact, I think the first one I ever went to was kind of like that. It was in a gymnasium, and the headliner for the one that I went to, the Honky Tonk Man, was there.
Nice.
Obviously not in his prime, but
dude, like IWA Mid-South was crazy, because they'd bring in legends. So we saw American Dream Dusty Rhodes.
Dude.
We saw Abdullah the Butcher.
Legend.
Terry Funk.
Nice.
Who else? The Road Dog from WWF. The Road Dog was there. Obviously Sabu, Jerry Lynn, a lot of the pro wrestlers. AJ Styles.
Yeah. Now,
He was he just was NWA champion at the time, so he was up and coming, but he was already like world champ for the NWA. When NWA TNA Impact Wrestling was NWA TNA, he was the NWA. Like, it was like that back in the day was nuts. It was fun. We saw so many legends, man. It was awesome.
So, I mean, what kind of wrestling was it? Was it hardcore, you know, with like freaking thumbtacks and I don't know. I'm just picturing some crazy stuff, because usually that's what happens at the house shows.
So both. So you had some of the best technical wrestling you'd ever have, because that's like CM Punk, Chris Hero, Danny Daniels, a lot of independent guys that just like put on a clinic. And then you had the hardcore stuff. So Abdullah the Butcher, Madman Pondo, the Necro Butcher, and they're sitting there having some thumbtack death matches. And we saw barbed wire craziness, massacres. I sat on a thumbtack because it went flying in the air.
Oh, dude, yeah.
But the thing is, they did a King of the Death Matches. They're the ones that had the King of the Death Match tournament every year. They have that, and then they'd have the Strong Style Tournament, which they called the Ted Petty Invitational. Ted Petty was one of the with Flyboy Rocco Rock from Public Enemy back in the day in the ECW.
Oh my gosh.
They would go through tables and walk around like doing the little hands in the air. I got like a bunch of weird wrestling knowledge, but
yeah, obviously, holy crap.
Yeah, it was fun though. But the thing is, those are the good old days. I was in college at the time, and Kyle and I would link up on a weekend and go watch some wrestling.
Some wrestling.
It was good stuff. Like, that was fun. Seems like that's kind of where the NWA is going now, which is very interesting. Going back to some territorial stuff and touring and fun stuff. But yeah, that's the most random thing I got for my birthday.
Pretty cool. That's pretty random.
Random as hell. We're bringing back nostalgia. That's what we're all about anyways. And
yes.
I mean, there's like some craziness, dude. So, so what have you been up to outside of sick and everything? I mean,
outside
birthdays.
Of sick. I mean, you know, I mentioned that I went to Portland Retro Gaming Expo. So that kind of consumed my, you know, I'd been to a couple of conventions with you guys, but you know, like I had a safety net, because I was just kind of like a second fiddle or whatever to you guys, you know, who have all these, you know, under your belt, you know, what's going to go on. Yeah. So I had an idea of what I needed for this expo. I didn't want to mess anything up. I wanted everything to go smooth, which it did. Yeah. Everything was great. Like, you know, leading up to it, just logistically, I was just making sure everything was perfect and that everything went perfect. So, a lot of my time was just consumed by making sure that everything was going to go right. And now that it's over and I'm back to the grind of, I'm working on strategy guide for Sunshine Anthology, which is going great. It's looking awesome. Obviously we make awesome stuff. Of course it's going to be awesome. But and then I'm back to my book as well. So, and then, it's, you know, sprinkling in some video game playing, because Nintendo was nice enough to release a major video game on my birthday.
We will definitely talk about that.
Yes, sir.
We will talk about some games for sure. We got to talk about our homework first, because we got to give the people what they want. But no, but But yeah, no, that's like Portland. I want to hear some Portland stories, because in classic Portland Retro Gaming Expo nature, like, I would go and miss every other year. And now I miss this year because I'm out in an island, trapped in paradise. I'm trapped in paradise, Tristan.
Yeah, you poor thing. It was funny. Like, everyone that came up to the booth and was asking where you were, you know, I told them that you were in Hawaii, and we all cried for you, played the violin. And
pour one out for me.
Exactly.
But yeah, no, like, because Portland's a cool thing. It seemed like, though, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed like they didn't have a ton of unique indie releases this year like they would have in the past.
I know
Atari and ColecoVision or Intellivision, like the homebrew side, the really second generation does, but that's not our wheelhouse. So
yeah, exactly. The Intellivision guys are always there. Atari Age is always there. And then Songbird is always there with their like Atari Jaguar and Lynx releases. They've done a couple Nuon things too. I was chatting with those guys. I really like the Songbird dudes. But cool. Yeah, outside of that, we really didn't see anything new as far as like, you know, NES and SNES homebrews like you see in the past.
Yeah, it's very interesting because like usually I think it was last year I was like wandering around and I found a limited release, like 5-copy homebrew.
Yeah, that Graveyard dude. And what's crazy is like, you know, I was talking to I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but I've got his business card around here somewhere. I was talking to the guy that was running Argon, which is a platform Brian?
That's Brian.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Brian Hall. Got his business card right here. Anyway, so I was talking to him and he actually had Graveyard Dude like queued up on his Argon like demo. And I'm like, I got a copy of that last year. And he didn't know that they did a limited release. So he was thinking that it was released this year. So.
Well, and that's the thing about like NES is it's the Wild West. So I think I could be wrong, but Google will prove us right later. I'm pretty sure that they're signed or at least releasing their physical via Brook Studio website.
Okay.
Pretty sure, which is cool. Brook Studio is awesome. But the thing is that like every single developer can just print off like 5-10 copies of a cartridge and just bring them to a convention, and then there's a limited release. And that's where it's truly a nightmare to try to research the entire homebrew scene.
And that's where, you know, books like yours come in handy and have that kind of information that's lost. Like people just don't know. You know, obviously, you're probably going to put that Graveyard Dude and the fact that there were 5 copies of it at Portland in your next book, and then everyone's going to know. So
if I'm sadistic enough to do an update.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I mean, you know what realm I went to with the release of the complete NES is I put highlights of the interesting releases.
Yeah.
Because I went everything with the NES oddities. I went all the games that were released up to that point, which is pre-NESmaker, right up to the launch of NESmaker. And now I'm putting in stuff that would rival a release on the NES back in the day. And you know, the more we look back on it, the bar wasn't super high on some of the low-tier NES games. The low-tier NES, some of those are really bad.
Yeah, and now you have games like Oratorio where, like, you know, people are, like, figuring out how to use and optimize NES Maker. Like, yeah, so you got bangers coming out now.
Yeah, it's wild. And I did see a teaser that he's working on Orebody 2.
I did not know that.
Saw that on the X, the Twitter, the X. So it's pretty cool. So that'd be awesome.
Cool.
Seeing him release a follow-up to it. I was playing the Boss Rush mode recently. It's fun. The Boss Rush mode is really fun. And if you're patient, it's not super challenging if you're patient and just learn the patterns. Yeah.
Exactly.
But yeah. So what were the highlights of Portland for you? Because the one thing we didn't do is we didn't complicate things since it was your first venture and give you a panel or anything crazy.
Yeah.
That might have been a little much. That might have been a little.
I might have been. So you know, like back whenever I was like a shy person or whatever in a previous life. I might have been terrified of the prospect of it. I think I would have got along, but I would have been pretty nervous. I will admit, especially on my own. But
well, yeah, exactly. I don't like doing panels on my own anymore, because when I did like 13, 14 conventions in a year, which was too much, mind you. I would feel like I'm repeating myself, because I would forget what I said at a previous convention to a new convention.
Sure.
And so, like, I always want a unique person to ask the questions that they want. So it's like, all right, pretend like it was like funny when we were at MGC. We were talking with the chainsaw guy, juggling chainsaws guy. Mm-hmm. And we were like, hey, pretend like you don't know what we release. And I knew that he's learning about who we
were. No, and it's an excellent format because, I mean, he's asking questions that the audience might ask. So instead of having all these weird questions coming out of left field from the audience, it's a little bit, you know, controlled, but, you know, along the same lines of like actually learning about our company also. So it was the best of both worlds.
Well, and the thing is, too, is that we asked the audience questions afterward, after he got all the general questions out of the way, because he's just doing the general stuff, which is perfect. So that's how I like to run my panels. I usually like to grab, like, so say we weren't there, you weren't there with me, and we weren't going to go do a panel together. I would find a buddy that's there, and him and I, or her and I, would just go and do the panel. So I've done one with Kurt Collada, Hardcore Gaming 101. I've done one with him. Mm-hmm. I've done panels with John Riggs. I've done panels with Radical Reggie, John Hancock, John Lester, Games 31.
Yeah.
Done tons of random fun panels. I did one where the guys from That's It, Are We Doing This, the Console War guys.
Oh yeah, and
Dan was sitting there, and we brought the Mega Man Worlds of Power book, and he read the Mega Man parts in a Mega Man voice from the cartoon.
That's hilarious.
He's like reading it going, all right, guys, let's go. And like, he was like sitting there doing the voice at the panel, because I got that book at the convention. And so we were reading it. Like, it was insane. Awesome. That was the same one where I shared a booth, because he didn't know that he could go to conventions at the time, with Leonard Herman, the game scholar. At the time, he's calling him the gaming historian. I'm like, well, there is one on YouTube. You should be more of the scholar in there. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, but Leonard Herman's cool. He had the brown box with him, so we had that showing off on the table. And it's just having fun at these conventions is cool. And always having a second person to just work with is fun.
Mm-hmm.
In the future, I like to have developers and just like talk game development and the art of creation. The art of creation is really what panels we need to start doing now. But yeah, so what else happened at Portland? What was fun? What was crazy?
So I purposely didn't like dismiss myself from the table. Like I brought a friend of mine with me who works at a retro gaming store. So I knew that he was a good person to have as a second like salesman. He did an amazing job too. Zach, awesome. Shout out to him. Such a good, and like, he's not that familiar with our games, but he was like picking up like so fast on like my sales pitches for everything. And he would just regurgitate it and like act like he'd played it before. It was so good, like so smooth. But,
well, it's like, so, you have 30 seconds to ping someone's interest who doesn't know about your stuff at these conventions. So
sure.
It's like, you got a little 30 second, like, hey, this game is like this, this, and this. And then it's like, they have to make a decision.
Yeah. So, you know, I did a whole lot of talking to the public, and but I didn't go around too much to different booths because I didn't want to spend money. I was very frugal this time. This is the least I've ever spent at a Portland Retro Gaming Expo. But I did do some networking while I was there. I already said that I talked to the Argon CEO. But I also that I write for Old School Gamer, Ryan Berger.
Man Gamer.
Yeah, and he actually just concluded a Kickstarter for the seventh year of Old School Gamer. They raised about $35,000, which awesome.
Cool.
Congratulations to them. But while I was talking to him at his booth, it turned out that the representative for Evercade was there and talking about, you know, breaking into the U.S. market. How they wanted to do that the best. And I gave him some more, some like collector perspectives, like from a collector perspective. My first question to him was, how many titles do you guys have? Because they do so many collections, they kind of get confused together. You don't really know what they have. So from a collector perspective, especially since they're such cheap cartridges, I would love to own all of them, but I don't know what there is. There's no resource that that says what there is. So I talked him into letting – I'm going to be making a collector guide for him. He told me to reach out to him, so, and he's going to give me all the resources that I need to do that, and he gave me permission to use all that stuff in my book. So win-win.
Nice. That'll be a fun one too.
Yeah.
Knowing the individually released games, that's that's the interesting part. Because you see a Toplan collection, a Jalico collection, what's up there.
Exactly. Yeah, break it down.
And it seems like he's going into individual or double released games now.
And we were talking about that, how he kind of not over-promised, but kind of gave the consumer kind of like a, you know, they're always going to give me 20 games on a cartridge kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, and now that they've kind of like pared back a little bit and you only get one or two games, then it's a harder sell. And actually, I've got a question for you, and this is something that I mentioned to him and something that I think about as a collector. The U.S. market and U.S. collectors, at least in my perspective, tend to shy away from anything that isn't ESRB. So, like, if you see, like, a title that has a PEGI rating, are you less likely to pick that up than if it had an ESRB rating on it?
So, the thing is that the general consensus from American gamers is yes.
Yeah, and that's what I think. And 100%. Whenever I mention that to him, because all of the Evercade releases so far are just PEGI.
Yeah.
And I told him that there's this weird aversion to purchasing anything that isn't ESRB, and that sounded like news to him. So
I don't know why that would be news, because from a collector perspective, it stems back to the NES. And the NES with the European PAL releases, they ran at a different megahertz. So when you would get a PAL game, it would be suboptimal for a US gamer. So we always went toward the US releases. You continue to fast forward through the console generations, and then you'd have region locking, so you couldn't play them.
Yeah.
Now, for me personally, with the Switch, I go with the coolest version. Don't care about rating.
Yeah, exactly. I don't care anymore at all. But I'm just saying, from a general standpoint,
Consumer. Yes. You put those on a table over in Portland Retro Gaming Expo, they're gonna look exotic.
Yes.
But they're not going to look like there's something that's a legitimate release. The other thing I noticed, and I didn't know that they were doing this, is I noticed that they did these little Game Boys with built-in games now.
Yes, he was showing that off at the expo. He had, like, I got to play with one of them. You've seen there's a whole bunch of YouTubers now that are actually reviewing them.
And I will tell you, I couldn't be any less interested to get one of those. Mm. And that's, you know, the Atari 2600 plus, the same deal. I don't need built-in games on a console. Like the uniqueness, the coolness of the Evercade was to get the cartridges and get manuals and get a case.
Well, and I get that, but I mean those little like small handhelds that have the stuff built in, they actually have a cartridge slot for the Evercade.
I know they do.
Okay,
but I'm just saying I'm not going to go and collect a bunch of consoles.
Collecting
is insane. So I feel like they're missing. Like they might be able to get somebody in who wants to have a collection of Mega Man or something. But when you're talking about you're releasing, who knows with scope creep, they might have 20, 30, 40 of these type of consoles in the future.
I know.
It's not something that the general population is going to collect.
I think
sitting on stock for the less desirable collections.
And I think that, the main reason for them putting out that little handheld was just to give the consumers like a cheaper in to that ecosystem, because I think the price point for those handhelds, correct me if I'm wrong, was $59. Is that right?
Like 60 bucks or something. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like $60, which is great. And I understand like, you know, giving people the built in thing with games, it's just more bang for your buck, but,
it's a second collection within the same construct. And that's where I'm like I get having the red and the purple and the blue, which is the colors of the spine that say whether it's a computer, a console, or an arcade. And I think that that's cool. And they're all the same form factor. And they're all like physical cartridges. They're all similar. But when you start to complicate things with the point of having a console now. Now I got to collect consoles with
this. I totally agree with you. Not only would I like – what I would have liked to them see them like actually just have a pack-in cartridge rather than built-in games.
Yeah. And – I mean, in reality, they got to up the quality, not lower the quality and make it more desirable. Because, like, I mean, you got to think about it. Like, who are we – who is he marketing toward? Collectors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
that's like, who he should be marketing towards.
Yes. Yeah. Like, and one of the pieces in the news we're going to talk about later, I feel like we got to get a little better quality versus quantity because – one thing is, and this isn't in our news, but like there's so many handheld bootleggy consoles popping up left and right, the Steam Deck killers and all that stuff, and they're all within $100 or $200, and I'm seeing people review them every week. We're seeing new ones that pop up. I'm like, oh, these look really cool. However, with so many coming out, I'm like, I'm just gonna stick with my Deck and my Switch. Because
you got two main players in the Republic of Gaming, whatever the crap that thing is called. Strix? No, it's not Strix. Whatever it's called. The mm-hmm. Asus's machine, and then you've got the Steam Deck, and then you've got everything else. And there's so many of them coming out now.
Yeah, and that's where I feel like Evercade is cooler, because it has the cartridges. It has mm-hmm. the collectible aspect, and it's getting mm-hmm. licensed games from the IP holders in order to go on there. And that's where I think it's really awesome. And it can be a unique avenue for independent developers. And I'm not talking NES homebrew, because he's done an NES homebrew or throwing Tanglewood on there to get Genesis homebrew on there. I feel like that's cool. Like these independent developers that we're working with too for Switch and stuff, a lot of those games through Unity can be ported to a simple machine. Yeah. And I feel like that is that could be the independent system where it has not unique releases, but cool releases. Because, yeah. I mean, you never want to make something that's closed off and now the developers can't sell their game on Steam because they got to be able to make money. Making it a cool physical version. Because the biggest problem with Switch, and on the publisher side, being involved with Premium ourselves, is the giant mound of games that you have to produce. The buy-in on Nintendo Switch mm-hmm. is extremely challenging. So a lot of the more independent developers are going to be either overlooked, or it's going to take a longer time for their games to come out if they get a physical contract. Especially because the games keep coming out. And, we still got to release the games that we are releasing. And so as we continue to sign contracts, like there's thousands more that aren't getting signed out there. Yeah. Even with Limited Run releasing, 1,000 games a week, they're still not keeping up. They're going towards IPs, though. They're not even supporting really indie that much anymore.
No, yeah, their scope has completely changed now.
Yeah. We're out on our own now over here with a couple other companies doing the thing. And so that's the thing, though, is like Evercade could do something super, super cool. That's not how they started. They started with all these compilations of arcade games and console games. And that's a cool thing because IP recognition gets initial sales.
It does. But
then once you got them, you focus. And I would release physical games for the Evercade from indie developers and make packaging for them.
I mean, you said that they work with some of the same developers that we've worked with. I mean, you can find Cathedral on the Evercade. We different set of history, but we almost had Sydney Hunter and they've got Sydney Hunter on their collection.
I mean, the irony was that Sydney Hunter was signed with their physical, which is First Press, the day before we announced that we are a company, and I just hadn't talked to John Lester. That was the only thing. So if I had talked to him, he might have waited because, I've known him for years, maybe. Yeah. But I didn't, and then we didn't turn the page or we never tried to, never came up that, hey, let's take the game. Like, that's not how I operate.
So, no, yeah, we're not going to.
But we could have had Sidney Hunter if I had been in talks with John Lester a little bit better. That was my bad.
Oh, well. But yeah, that was a really cool thing. And that's one of the things that, you know, like, obviously we're there to sell games and represent Premium and have a presence there so that mm-hmm. people know who we are and they learn about our company. And, you know, we're still there to sell books as well. I sold one of your mini SNES books. One of those sold. I sold three of my books. And then, dude, all Sunday, people were coming up to my book looking super interested. They're like, oh, my gosh, this is awesome. I wish I had this. I'm like, buy it. Please buy it. Fingers crossed. And, like, the whole time, like, they just, like, would walk away. I'm like, what just happened?
Well, so. And like I have to chat with Scott because a lot of my other books didn't make it there, my newer ones, and I had three people from Portland email me afterward asking why my books weren't there because mm-hmm. they buy my books at conventions.
Yeah, I have some people asking.
So, yeah, because Scott is supposed to send a couple of each, and I just don't think that they got out to you. And it was Jeez. Like, well, I mean, like. They have my pocket one out there, which is cool. But like the Switch Collector Volume 2 Part 2 is out, and we didn't sell it at a convention all year.
Like it's just been the missed opportunity big time.
And we haven't even done a second chance sale for it yet on the website.
Yeah.
Like it's there though. We have it.
Like, but yeah, to finish that thought, like, you know, we're there obviously for a purpose. But on the other end, and maybe more importantly, we're there to network and work with other developers and like meet people and just grow those relationships. It's invaluable. Yep.
It's fun.
It's super fun. Oh, it's so much fun.
Yeah. And I mean, I only have a couple more years here on the island or whatever, but I am planning to go to Game On Expo, which is John Lester's convention in mm-hmm. the spring, which happens to be the weekend before my daughter's spring break. So we're going to be going to California as a family, but I think I'm going to come out early, hit up Game On, and then meet them in California.
When is Game On next year?
Spring.
Okay. Wow, spring. That's completely different.
Change it to spring. Yeah, it's the weekend before spring break for my daughter. So we're going to go to Disneyland. This is what my wife has scheduled because we got like the little vacation club thing. So we don't have to pay for a hotel. So all we got to do is spend $100 to get out there. Flying. Not bad.
Bad at all.
Nope. So yeah, I'm definitely gonna hit up Game On. I really want to go to Midwest Gaming Classic again. That's kind of my favorite one. But I think
that's
it's way too expensive for me to do it though.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Let's
figure out.
I haven't missed one of those for me, so
yeah, I could drive across the ocean.
Yeah, dude. Get one of those like boat cars.
So one story that I haven't been able to tell because it's been about a long time since we recorded. I have a Friday family game night story that was hilarious, and it was regarding the Analog Pocket and Insanity. Mm-hmm. So we were sitting there wanting to play like some games together. My wife and I usually like play certain stuff like Toe Jam and Earl, or we'll play Mario, or we'll play different stuff on the classic series. And I have my Analog Pocket, you know, it's FPGA. It's awesome. I have it with the dock so I can play it on my TV, and I got it. It's modified so you can play different cores in there, like Nintendo Core, Super Nintendo Core, Genesis Core, TurboGrafx Core. And you can play all those. And so my wife and I are sitting here, we're trying to play, and I'm trying to hook up the Neo Geo 8-bit Do controller, one working. Looked online, there's a special adapter I got to get, so I was like, well, crap. Trying to connect my Super Nintendo one to it, couldn't get it to work. So we ended up, what we ended up doing was hooking up a cord, and my wife is like sitting on a bench, a wooden bench that we have in front of the TV, like playing it old school style with the wire.
Oh gosh, how short is the cord?
Oh, it was really short. It was like right in front of it. But I found out I'm just dumb, and it's hilarious because the next morning I'm sitting there, I'm like, there's a sync button on the back of the dock. So I hit the controller, hit the sink, it synced up, and I'm like, I'm laying next to her in bed, and I'm like across the whole room playing the games, and I'm like, man, oh, that's all I had to do, and we could have been playing gaming wirelessly the whole time. And and I still, though, I ended up the week or two later, I ended up getting in the 8-bit dongle, because there's a dongle 2 that came out that's supposed to work with it using using builds. You can use beta builds in it and shit. Still couldn't get it to work with my 8-bit. I've watched the other YouTubers. They put it in, they sync it, and it works. I could not get mine to sync with the new one. So I still haven't gotten the awesome Neo Geo CD style controller to work yet, because that thing's clicky. It's awesome.
Yeah, I love the clicky joystick.
Sometimes. Yeah, I have the originals. It feels close. It feels very close to the original, which is awesome. But either way, though, hilarious that all I had to do was like sync it up with the system, and I was trying to sync it up with the dongle that it came with, and it would not work. It's like so funny.
It happens. I mean, there's so many like adapters and just things are supposed to be plug and play nowadays. They just aren't, man.
Like, well, and it's very challenging because I do enjoy tinkering sometimes with stuff. But then when it comes time to family game night, I just want to play. I just want to plug it in and play. And when it doesn't play, it's like, all right, we move on to something else. And then we don't play with that. That's just how it is.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, yesterday I just built some Legos, so I got a Lego TIE bomber. I got a TIE bomber.
I saw your Facebook post. Yeah. In fact, it's right here on my other window. Nice. Yeah,
built that yesterday. That was fun.
Hashtag Lego Star Wars.
Love Lego Star Wars. That's the only stuff that we're buying out here is we have like a little table with Lego Star Wars stuff on it. It's just fun to make. And then, like, it's funny is when you move, you take the Legos and you put them in a box or put them in a bag and they all get destroyed. Lego Ewok Village, I rebuilt it, but I rebuilt it like just making it look cool. I didn't rebuild it with the manual because I'm not going and trying to make it look perfect again.
Well, okay. After the first time making it with a manual, because, you know, there's like numbered bags. I don't think it'd be possible anyway.
No. Well, it's like, because you take it apart to put it in bags or whatever.
Yeah.
And so when I put it back together, it's like, well, which piece goes with, like, yeah, I had it separated by by tree trunks, because there's three tree trunks with three different colors. And I had it separated like that. But even putting it back together, it's like, well, I just made it happen. And it looks cool.
If my Bowser up there on my shelf ever falls, he'll just have to stay in a pile of Legos because it'll never go back together the same.
Now I still have my other giant thing that I got, which I think was for Father's Day or it was for something. My Lego Atari 2600.
Yay, nice.
That's huge. I haven't started that one yet. I got that right as we took our unneeded siesta here from BGBS. But yeah, game nights are fun. Yesterday we ended up not doing family game night. Was going to with the giant game that was released, but we decided to just go out to Target and hang out and go and have some coal fire pizza at a place, go walk around Target. My wife might have bought another Lego Star Wars item. Got the Boba Fett slave one, the new one.
Oh, nice. The
smaller one. Yeah, I want to get the big one, but we got the small one.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we got something new to build. Usually we don't buy a new Lego until we build the old one. So, like, the Lego Atari is, I think, special. I'm going to wait on that.
Nice.
I grew up with Atari, but as we talked about before, the 2600 Plus, I'm not interested. But no. I do have a nostalgia for those.
Even the VCS. The VCS, to me, is kind of, I don't know. If I found a good deal on one, I'd probably get it, but I probably wouldn't use it that much, to be honest. And
yeah,
there's just, I don't know, Atari.
The VCS went the route that I would recommend that, you know, the Evercade goes.
Yes. Because
they went indie games, but they only went digital. So the fact is they could go that route with that construct and then have the physical cartridges on top of it. And it would be killer.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't last. And this is the thing. And this can go into a topical news thing, which actually affects Evercade, affects the VCS, affects everything. Best Buy and Walmart phasing out physical games. And that's a huge thing. If you think about it, the way that the Evercade needs to penetrate the market is to get into Walmart and Target.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they need to do. And a Walmart, a Target, a Best Buy was never going to be something where, like, on the premium edition game side, like, you have to have a retail release to do that. We do highly collectible items.
Yeah.
So it was never in the books to easily allow us as a company to jump in there. But the Evercade, it would be perfect. Just toss them on the shelf and they would sell. But they're moving away from physical. Which is,
well, at that point, I think that would force Evercade's hand, and they would have to be at ESRB at that point if they're on the shelf, right?
In
a retailer? Yeah.
No, they would have to, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. If they went the retail route, they would have to be ESRB. But because Best Buy and Walmart are now pulling away, like, what are we doing here?
Writing's GameStop, on the wall, man. Like, it's...
GameStop's a show what it was. It's a pop company now. And they have some retro series, like they just go back like two generations, and they have some games on like a little tiny little shelf, is how they do it over here.
Back in the day, you know, you had KB Toys, you had Toys R Us, you had the five entities that became GameStop: EB Games, Babbage's, Software Etc., Funko Land, GameStop.
Funko Land.
So all five of those existed. You had Sears, you had
Service merchandise.
Yeah, exactly. And you had Montgomery Ward and like all these other retailers that had video games. And now you're down to Target, Walmart, Best Buy, and GameStop. And two of those have said that they're phasing out physical. That's crazy.
Yeah. Now, I caught that from like YouTubers like RGT85 and a couple other YouTubers. I have only seen them talking DVDs and CDs, but
Exactly. So exactly like you said, if you read into the Best Buy news, they said that they're getting away from physical, but they are, yes, talking about just movies. It does not affect game sales at this time, but the writing is on the wall. That's next. Obviously, that's next. Maybe not next year, maybe not the year after that, but it's coming. So yeah,
and the thing is that, you know, it could be it's wild. It's going to have to change the way that retailers and physical companies sell more akin to what Premium does and what Limited Run Games does.
Correct.
And which is because Limited Run hasn't been announcing anything Best Buy in years. Mm-hmm. And it's because of the same deals that I feel like it's just not as advantageous to sell in retail. It's why we haven't went on and on our own side. It's too much. And there's too much risk because, you know, retailers have their processes in place where if it's not selling, they can liquidate it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, what are we doing here then? Because we're not producing enough for retail.
Yeah. No, yeah. Like, and I mean, yeah, just think about how many Best Buy locations there are in the U.S. and they have to supply, you know, X amount of copies of all their games to those. And, you know, they aren't necessarily selling like they want them to. Well,
and if you think about it, if there's probably a couple thousand, right, in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's still not the minimum for Switch. And so you're getting these AAA titles, these major IPs that are still printing the minimums.
Yeah.
For physical. So like one of our games at Premium is printing the same amount as a major IP on Switch, just because, you know, these different companies are only picking up one or two copies per store.
Mm.
And that's wild to me.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. Like all these games that they might be good games. If you don't pre-order it from, say like GameStop may get like one or two copies of that game and that's it.
Well, and they play weird games too, because like literally I have money in hand. Let me go buy the new Mario game on launch day, and which is 6 p.m. the day before for me is midnight.
Yeah.
I have money in hand. You can't buy it because you didn't pre-order it. You can't buy it till tomorrow. And I'm like, really? So you
don't want my $60? They did that to you? That is ridiculous.
Yeah. I called them up. I said, hey, I want to come pick up a game. Did you pre-order it? I did not. Can I just come pick it up? They're like, well, we have copies, but we can't sell to you till tomorrow. And I'm like, Okay, so I went to a different store. I went to the Post Exchange and got it for tax-free the next day. I did not give GameStop my money because I'm like, all right, well, if you're going to play that game, I'm just going to go to a different store and go buy it there. There's copies at Target and Walmart here right now. So, but it's just like, it's weird the way that the retailers are using still old school tactics and they're all failing. And then they're just wondering why the sales aren't happening.
Well, and it does make me wonder if like all of these, you know, people like Capcom and soon enough, they're not going to have a brick and mortar to even sell it in. So they're going to have to sell it direct to consumer, kind of like Square Enix does.
I like Square and NIS America.
Yeah.
Yep. Which to me is fine. I mean, we're in the internet era.
But where does that leave the little guy that doesn't have the infrastructure to do that?
They come to us, and then we try to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Like they come to a publisher.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. And I've purposely, you know, had the team like stray away from brick and mortar because it's just the major big box retailer brick and mortar because it's going the way of the dog. It's gone. But the small retailers, the small game stores are great. And those ones are away. But you're not selling thousands of copies. You're selling, you know, dozens of copies, which is cool. It's a much different construct, but it's more personal and you get more passionate companies. Buy your stuff, which I mean, that the thing is, though, is that we're going into a niche collector's market. So going back to the Evercade question, has to be marketed toward collectors. Because it's going away. There's not going to be a way for him to penetrate the big box retailer market if they're all pulling away.
I know. And I mean, that just begs another question. And you know, more writing on the wall. At what point? And, you know, it's all doom and gloom and people say that it'll never happen, but it's just going more and more this way, digital only, which is something no collector wants. But at what point is it going to happen? And will it ever happen? Because remember what Xbox One did and what that did to Microsoft. Boy, I mean, like, talk about touching the third rail. They got burned. Yeah. Boy. Well, they're still feeling the ramifications of those decisions.
Well, I mean, the thing is, it'll be very telling with the next Nintendo system announcement. Yes,
exactly.
Because if they go backward compatible, then they know they're still going to be supporting. They could go completely a different realm and do their Nintendo thing.
Always does.
Yep. And it'll be telling because the thing is, PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X doing disc-based media is a very low buy-in. And the thing is that I know for a fact, being on the other side of things, that Sony has moved away from its own production facilities now and they farm it out to other companies. Mm. That has happened and it's in the process of happening. They're still doing it, but it's in the process of happening, which means that they're pulling away from handling all the infrastructure and the cost that comes associated with it. But there are still companies that will make it, just like there's still companies that make vinyl popped up. There's still companies but there's only a few. There's like maybe a half dozen. So the thing is, that's the way that physical will go for disc-based media. The thing with Nintendo Switch is it's a unique proprietary cartridge that they control in-house.
And boy, do they make money off that.
They make money off of it, but is that enough money to keep that giant facility going indefinitely, or do they kill it like they're doing with the 3DS? They killed the production. They moved on to the Switch stuff. Now, do they want to keep doing that, or do they want to go the way of the disc and keep it simple and farm it out and allow the quality control on their end still? That's going to be up to them. That's the thing, though, is I feel like in our lifetime, if they stick with disc-based media and those facilities keep going, there's no reason for them not to support physical. We've seen Microsoft kind of backing away from the totalitarian, expensive, physical, high minimum quantities. We've seen that recently with a bunch of rumors that they're going to start supporting more indie, which is good. But the thing is, it's going to be a niche collector's thing. It's not going to be mass, especially with the big box retailers pulling out. Amazon's going to be the way. The online.
Oh, shoot. How did I forget about Amazon? Yeah. It never even crossed my mind while we were having this conversation. But yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Yeah, Amazon will be the way. And Amazon, eBay, all those type of things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like the thing is that on our side, we've had other companies handling the Amazon side and they've handled it pretty poorly to the point where people can't find our stuff. We may be in the process of taking it back over if it doesn't meet. You know, our guy Josh, who's with our team for Gamers for Gamers, he's making some decisions, and we just want people to be able to know we exist out there, and we're still kind of like in there in a little microscoped area.
Like, hey guys, us too.
We're over here. Yeah, like we have games. They're awesome. We make cool stuff. Like, make the coolest stuff out there.
And that's the funny thing, dude. Like back to Portland just for a second. But every person that this happens so often, they're like, man, you guys have awesome games. How come I've never heard of you? I'm like, good question.
Marketing.
Like,
marketing.
Yeah.
I mean, reality, just marketing. I mean, we've stepped it up with this in this fall. We made a decision to just get out there a little bit. But thing is Tristan and I just make the cool stuff. We do all the fun design and everything. Like everybody else is making the other side happen for us, and then we jump in. There's a bunch of other new stuff, but I feel like we should just hit up on, since we're 50 minutes in, we should probably just hit the big ones, the ones that affect us that we're more interested in. And I'm not even going to go modern. Let's go something older and retro that hit up like the first or second week. It's some Nestmaker news that we saw. Mm-hmm. And what are our thoughts on it as collectors? So they had announced in the Facebook groups that there is an NES Maker kiosk of sorts that's being worked on. So essentially, these kiosks would be available in certain locations, and a gamer could go in there, go onto this like menu type system, and it'll print a cartridge. What are your thoughts of that, Tristan? I got my thoughts too, but what are your thoughts?
As a collector, I'm getting some Famicom Disk System kiosk vibes. Yes. Obviously, it's going to be a generic cart with some generic, like, NES Maker or whatever artwork, because clearly it's not going to be, like, you know, a real, quote-unquote, release of that game where it's going to have the label. Unless, you know, they're going to be, like, reaching out to Bunny Boy akin to his, like, 2017 Christmas cart that has a digital label. That'd be cool.
It wouldn't
be cost effective.
But that's the thing. So in production, how you save money is printing in bulk. Yeah. So I don't feel like those cartridges could be affordably done.
No.
Because those boards that they use for NES Maker are super expensive. Mm-hmm. When we on the publisher side, when we're doing NES Maker, we're going straight to the source. We're not going through one of the companies. Going through those companies, there's a couple different companies that do flashers and do stuff. It's pretty damn expensive. So adding on something cool like the digital label would be amazing, but it would be like $100 cartridge or more.
Oh yeah, no,
it'd be stupid. It'd be awesome. I would love it.
I would love it too.
The other thing that's crazy though. Think about this. So when I did my NES Oddities book, right, covered every single release ever, version control. So say there's this game, say Ore Body 2. We had mentioned that John V's doing Ore Body 2, working on it. Say he puts a version on the kiosk and it's an unfinished version with missing a bunch of features, hasn't been finished yet, but it's on the kiosk and it gets printed at these stores. And now they got a cool cartridge. That's a game that's preserved physically, which is awesome. However, then later on when he does his own release, whether that be Kickstarter or with like a premium or somewhere else, he does his own release, which is the complete version. Now there's two version controlled versions where somebody's going to randomly buy that game with a weird label, kind of like the Famicom Discs Reiner, this is Reiner, and you're gonna have this weird system of collection that and it makes me, like, even tongue-tied, it makes me wonder, like, who's this actually for? What is this for? Because if you're, I know that VGNY in Video Games New York was going to be one of the ones, because that's the area where, you know, the NES Maker creator Joe Granato's out near. But the thing is that like, it's going to be in some small areas, niche areas. So it'll be only a couple places where you could get this done realistically. Maybe if you find him at a convention, he'd do it. The other thing is version control, and also, like, can a developer, which I assume yes, can a developer say, I don't want to have my game in this? And who's to say that, like, if the creator ain't there, that, like, say VGNYsoft has a new employee over there, and they just go, oh, I'm going to print a copy of Oratorio, but John V asked not to have it there because they have a game released with a company like Premium, but yet it's still there, click print, there's version of that game out there. And how do they get paid? That's the other thing.
Yeah, like, it sounds to me like they're going to have some back-end system where, like, every single version, every single ROM that's, like, actually flashed to a cart has its own license. Otherwise, you know, who's to say and who's to prove how many copies and what a developer is actually, like, owed? You know what I mean? Like,
well, and like, would it be, like, easier if they did a back-end system that goes up to the cloud that shoots it to a repository that NES Maker runs, which means then... Then from a damn, like, accounting perspective, that'd be a nightmare. I would not want to
It would be like you or I giving the raw PDF or the raw book files to someone and saying, okay, I trust you to give me the money for every single download or every single whatever that you give to people. But, like, that's a whole lot of trust to put in somebody.
Or are we overthinking it and that somebody puts their game in the kiosk and they get a flat fee from NES Maker. Like, they say, here's $1,000. It's in the kiosk and it's in three locations.
Sure.
And
At that point, you wouldn't have to think about it. Yeah. At that point, you wouldn't.
So maybe we're overthinking it. Maybe we're overcomplicating it. And also, based on the interest of it, maybe we're over assuming that it would be printed off in the millions of copies because it'd be so expensive to do anyways that I feel like
that's why I'm like,
who is this for is the question.
This is a niche product for a niche market.
Yeah, because, like, I love the idea of NES Maker, the developers being able to have their own cartridge flasher to make their own games.
I like it too, but
I think it's an amazing thing. It's created an awesome thing. But doing with that other piece right there, I just don't know. I don't understand who it's for. Maybe we can bring on Granado on Video Game Bullshit in the future.
I mean, it's been done a couple times before to varying success because. Like we talked about, it's been done with the Famicom disk system. It was also done with Sega Genesis carts with those Blockbuster, right?
Yeah, Blockbuster. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, Game Factory.
Game Factory, yes. Game Factory.
Yeah.
So those are out there, and that would just put another product out there with indie games.
And there would be no cool art for it because, I mean, you can have a little art, little, like, printer for the labels or something, but it wouldn't be high quality.
Just like,
it
black would be, and white, like the old rental copies.
Well, I'm saying even if they had like a color printer, a high quality color printer, there's certain labels. I mean, hell, the whole NES homebrew community for years was using these labels and the little ends would pop up because they didn't have good adhesive on them.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't use that company. I didn't use that version of labels because I wanted it to look as retail as possible. And but the thing is that it would be something like that where they would print it out. It could be super high quality, but it's still like up to the user to cut them out and do all that. Like, it would just be
that'd be a mess.
It just wouldn't be as cool as a physical release. It wouldn't be retail.
It's not the same. And at that point, I mean, are you gonna charge full price? Because you're getting an inferior product.
Right? It's gonna cost. I mean, there's no way that they could charge less than like $40 to make that work. Yeah. Because the cartridge, the shell, the cartridge shell, and the board alone in small quantities. I mean, you're talking like you don't even know how many people would be doing this. So you wouldn't even want to order 100 copies of blanks for the store because you don't know. You might be sitting on those for a year. So it's just like, I just don't know who it's for. And if, like I said, maybe Joe Granato will come on Video Game Bullshit and talk about his ideas behind it. Maybe
I'm sure he's got answers. I'm sure he does. Yeah, he's heard all these questions.
But he's very very tight-lipped about the things like spooky, like like it was the classic Kyle saying the snake oil salesman, like. But he always has a great plan in place, but there's a million plans, you know, when it comes to it. Like, it's, I would rather see certain stuff get fully executed before jumping on to the next thing.
It's almost as if you're talking about his the Kickstarter he did for his game.
Mystic Searches.
Yeah.
We had to cancel the game quest.
He kickstarted the game, just for anyone who's not familiar, and you can fill in the blanks because I don't know the full story, but he did that, and then he's like, oh, I'm doing a documentary too. But then here's this other thing that's a proof of concept. Oh, here's NES Maker. It just
branched. Yeah, like the Kickstarter was for the documentary and a game. The documentary was him finding the game and then interviewing NES homebrew developers. And it was also the side journey was finding his old Mystic Searches stuff. And so that was the cool thing about it. And then he had, as he was creating the screens for Mystic Searches, he was at conventions having people make levels and stuff. And, you know, I was sitting there drinking a beer with them and I was like, hey, why can't we just do this with new art everywhere?
That's right.
And light bulb went off and, like, he probably was already thinking about it, but he makes shit happen, and he made a whole community, which I feel like the outcome of Nest Maker was well worth the wait. But on the other side, like, I would like to play the final version of Mystic.
Well, yeah, I'd love the NES game that I paid for.
I would love to. I just want to play it. I mean, I'll buy it again. I don't – it's fine. Like, sure.
I think that's the Kickstarter that I've been waiting the longest on so far.
Yeah, yeah, I would say that's it. It's been, what, 10 years now?
Just about. It feels like it, anyway.
Not quite, but yeah, close.
Yeah.
I guess it's insane, dude. Yeah, my daughter's almost 12, and I think she was born when.
Yeah.
Because the old one was, the oldest pre-order was Krautbuster for the Neo Geo, but I have that now. So. Even got Paprium. Like, we even got Paprium.
Yeah, even Paprium came out.
I'm just saying, like, all the craziness we still have. Yeah, but the thing is, I remember there was one part where it was there's some justification that Mystic Origins was the cartridge that we all paid for, but then it wasn't offered to us as a Kickstarter thing, and we bought it, so I was like, I thought it was cool. And it was he was like, well, based on my original idea, that met the intent. You know, like, but it wasn't a full game, it was just the demo, first level. So I was like, but if you went and did the whole game with that engine right there, just with those mechanics, would have been fine. Would have been great. I would have been like, cool, and then make the expanded version, and that'd be awesome. But yeah, just getting, you know, you always spend 95% of the time in the last 5%, and he's been in that 5% tile for like 5 years now or longer. And I would love to see it. Poor Joe, we love him. We're just being highly critical right now. Nothing but love, because he's a fellow creator. Like, dude has his heart in the right place. Yeah. He's given up and given to the community a F ton, more than anybody else that we know out there in the community. So, that being said, though, who is this crazy kiosk for? We don't know.
Have a place? Arguably, yes. Arguably, no. But, you know, whatever. It's just another way for developers to get their game out there, and I'm all for it.
Yeah, exactly. I just don't know, like, from a kiosk perspective, it doesn't make any sense. Like,
well, and from a collector standpoint, like, who's going to want just a generic one? Because if a collector wants the game, they want the game. They want the full release.
Well, and also, like, being ingrained in the homebrew community for, you know, close to 20 years now. I think it was 2006, 2007 is when I started with the homebrew community. I would rather fully support the actual developer one-to-one and give them versus anything. So, like, if they sign with Broke Studio, I want to support the developer as far as possible. I don't want to just go to a brick and mortar. Like it's homebrew still. It's still indie to me. Still independent game development. I would rather support them as much as I can. Which is also kind of the mentality behind how we support developers with premium and stuff. Like, it's that's always been the thing, is like however I can get the game to closely support the developer, I would always prefer.
Yes.
would always prefer. So craziness, man. Craziness.
So there was a couple of games that I got outside of the big one, but there was one that I wanted to talk about, actually, from a topical thing. There is a game release that is looks very, very similar to our standard edition that came out. And I don't know if you knew this.
Uh-oh.
Tunic.
Oh, wow. That looks very, very akin to ours.
Tunic was released, and it looks exactly like our premium standard. So Fangamer released this.
Oh, jeez.
And it is, like, exactly like ours. And
that looks like we did it.
It looks like we did it. It has a little bit of foil on it. It has a red foil on the back. Looks exactly like what we do for
weird.
It's very interesting.
What do they say? The most sincere form of flattery is
yeah. Imitation is the most sincere form of flattery. So the difference here, though, which is different than ours, I haven't opened it yet because it's in my backlog. I need to play it. Was that number one? It's not side loading like ours are. So ours, like this, it's side loading. It's also year one premium, where it's the really thin.
Oh, thin. Okay, yeah. Well, whatever.
Hardcore sleeves. And then you have to open it from the top, and there's flaps, so you're gonna ruin the box when you open it.
Yeah.
As soon as you open it, it's gonna be ruined. Whereas ours, you open from the side. So there are some lessons learned that Fangamer could take from premium. Update your quality a little bit, because the thing is, Tunic's awesome. Like I loved this game. I only played it on Game Pass, so I haven't played it without lag. So I'm gonna love playing this game on Switch.
But yeah, you're right, dude. That straight up looks like one of our.
I bet if I went and grabbed one of our standards over there, it's one for one, same size. Wow. Like which is cool. I feel like this is now part of the standards.
Yeah, you're welcome, Fangamer. You're welcome.
Yeah. No, but like, one of their designers had to have seen our stuff, and it's one for one size. So they definitely, but they missed some of the details. So they're not quite there. And either way, though, it's cool. I would love to see more high quality releases. So hats off to them. That's awesome. And I mean, I've seen two and three different companies now doing something that they don't call a retro edition that literally looks like our Super Nintendo style boxes. Like they've been like doing the same format and size and like definitely. So it's cool. The other game that I got physically outside of the main one we'll talk about, I got Astro Knight.
Oh, what's that?
The Metroidvania. Metroidvania. So it's like that. I've been trying to find as many of those in the genre as possible. It's missing anything inside of it, so no manual, no nothing, and it just has like printing on the inside, which is cool. Yeah. This one was released by Funstock, so physical publisher Funstock. Jandusoft though was the digital publisher for it. But they never put the developers on there, though, which drives me nuts. Like, Funstock and Jandusoft are two physical publishing companies. Developers need to have credit. On Switch Collector Year 3, it's been taking so much longer because I'm doing the research and trying to give the developers the credit. And it's been, like, this is a perfect example where it does not have – it has Doom Game Studio right here in the copyright that I can find their name. That's the only spot. There's a quick little tiny logo here too. So you gotta hunt every single back of a cartridge. Crazy stuff, man. You get any newer Switch games outside of the main one?
I'm trying to think. The only game outside of that main one that I bought was my main pickup from Portland. I bought Link Faces of Evil on CDI.
Nice.
Yeah, a European copy, but still, I didn't have that one.
I did get this. It's manual.
What's Castlevania. That?
Castlevania Symphony of the Night on the Sega Saturn. A manual from done by Art of Ibarra.
Yes.
Yeah, I got that. And then I got a bunch of homebrew stuff over here that's in a little stack.
Okay.
Some of it's numbered, some of it's not. Some of it's Broke Studio, some of it's Kickstarter. The one from Bro is this game right here, which is Hallusa Saga. Kaji's Trials, which is like a Zelda style game.
Cool.
It has a Doge on the front, which is part of the Doge meme. But somebody posted it online that they had picked up the cartridge. I'm like, where the hell is this at? It's Broke Studio. So I'm like, cool. The one thing I like about Broke Studio, though, is they put a bunch of little treats inside of the releases. I always get a coaster. They have a Broke Studio coaster. So I have a bunch of coasters that I use for all my stuff. But Palooza Saga was a good one. And then this is another one that I found on a group, which I got a thank you little sticker on the front. The House in the Cemetery.
Wow.
And this was part of a Nestmaker game, which was basically a small release that this guy did.
Hey.
Day Yin Retro Games is basically the publisher, the creator of it. So this was a cool one. And it looks like a little adventure game, little like Zelda style again, adventure game.
Very cool.
That's one. This one, I'm pretty sure, was a convention. And they have a cool case that I would like to do called Tempered Vengeance.
Ooh.
Another one that's Zelda style. This is all Zelda likes. But you see this case.
Yeah, that's really nice. I have one of those. What game do I have?
This is not a bit box.
Yeah, that's really nice.
It is customgamecases.com.
Okay.
And it reminds me of the old rental cases from back in the day where it has like, it's like really high quality, fits there, and then the manual fits on the side. But it's the same size as, very close to, an NES box.
That's cool.
One thing I didn't like about the bit boxes is they were huge.
Yeah.
House of the Cemetery, I got number 68 of 100.
Nice.
Bottom. Marker on the bottom. Yeah, this one was Pack and Sack Games is who released this one.
Wait, who else did Pack and Sack? I've heard that before. Who else? What else have they done?
Off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, dude, that sounds familiar. I'm pretty sure I have another one of theirs.
Yeah, Pack and Sack has done a bunch. Dave from Pack and Sack. And then the other one was from a Kickstarter. I got Astro Bros, which has also got modern ports and stuff.
This artwork is
Sega Genesis. This is the Kickstarter edition. There's a little sticker that they put on it. It said Kickstarter edition. This one was NeoFid Studios. And Astro Bros is like, it looks awesome. And then they give you, with all those companies too, they usually give you like a ROM for it too. So I load the ROM side-loaded on my Steam Deck or my analog pocket so I could play it. I don't have the consoles here in Hawaii, so I haven't had a way to play all these games, but I got all this stuff. The other thing was, from a book perspective, I want to give one book shout-out. This is to Matthew Taranto. We'll say Taranto. T-A-R-A-N-T-O. Matthew Taranto. He did a book with Howard Phillips called Game Master Classified.
Ooh, cool.
And now this is with Howard Phillips from Howard and Nestor, but he also was a tester for Nintendo. What I like about this, and I'm using another bookmark, what I like about this, though, is it goes year by year with Howard in Nintendo and has unique stories directly from him where he overcomes certain stuff that's been over-dramatized over the years. So he talks about when he went to Nintendo, but then it's all broken up by small areas. And Matt is a comic book artist.
Just like Howard and Nestor.
Just like Howard and Nestor. And so throughout this, there's cool pictures, there's screenshots, and then there's little comic pieces. And then they talk about the games that they like from the year. So like Super Mario Brothers, Duck Hunt, if it's a plus thumbs up or a thumbs down. And they talk about from a industry pro perspective as well as from a gamer perspective.
That's really cool.
Stuff in here like in 1981, Commando, Ninja Kid, Chubby Cherub, Muscle, Tag Team Wrestling. Like they go over all the games that they were talking about throughout the year. So this is a really cool little one. And this is what I like with reviews, is you give a personal touch to it. You're not saying Ninja Gaiden is an action game where you're a ninja and you jump. And
that's heard that a million times.
You don't need that. So this is the most interesting. This is probably the coolest book that I've gotten over the last years. And it's something similar that I would love to do in the future, that type of form factor. I wouldn't do it from that realm because it's already done. It's right there. But and the quality is pretty good. There's a lot of little options that, you know, you and I do in our books that's missing here, but from a quality perspective of the actual paper and everything, it's good.
Very nice.
Really awesome. I would highly recommend, though, Game Master Classified. And Howard's a great dude. He does our little intro. So he'll do our intro for this episode.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, so where do you pick that up?
So I got it off Kickstarter. Okay. Assumption would be that he has other copies available somewhere, but okay. I mean,
I'll just look it up. We'll see. We'll see what Google gives us.
I assume he just Kickstarter published it, like just went through his own means somehow. He did it himself. I did hit him up on Twitter or something just to see where he had it available, but he hasn't hit, or no, maybe Facebook, but he hasn't hit me back up yet. Cause I'm like, hey, you want to work on a project? Let me know. Like, cool. I could work with him on something, but, so far nothing, but either way, great book. Highly recommended.
Awesome.
Now the thing is, outside of that, I did get one more game. And I didn't realize it when we chose the bullshit homework. I got Project Starships in the mail for the PlayStation 4.
Really? Oh, cool.
It got a Play Exclusives release on the PlayStation 4 on East Asia Saw. From East Asia Saw.
And that's weird that you mentioned that because I may actually own that physically. I just haven't looked on my shelf. I could swear that I have that game already. I might actually have it on my shelf.
I did not have it. Because I didn't collect the Play Exclusives to PlayStation. I only collected the Switch ones. But I think it's a good time to transition. We'll talk about what we've played after. But let's talk our bullshit homework since we're over an hour in now. We didn't even talk all the news, by the way. This has been a good day.
We have a lot to catch up on. We
haven't recorded in a while. That's right. But yeah, I think it's a good time to talk a little bit about the bullshit homework and Project Starship X. So I don't know if you want me to lay the wallpaper or should we just go into a review? What do you think?
How about a very thin layer of wallpaper, just very so people know.
Thin wallpaper. Okay, cool. So Project Starship X is a roguelike shooter where you crash kill comical abominations. Pilot your spaceship as Swag Tulu, like Cthulhu, but Swag Tulu. In this original and wacky Lovecraftian parody.
Yeah.
Colorful characters, surreal situations, a hilarious take on cosmic horror. And it was listed by Studio Mudprints as the best shoot 'em up of the year 2020. So as it was released during COVID world. The features, you got Swag Tulu, Tahulu, Cthulhu, or whatever. You can crash your ship right in the enemy's face. And you will be the only one who comes out unharmed. multi-purpose dodge mechanic. Now, having a button to dodge, like, that's insane. Rogue-like action. Hybrid playability thanks to procedural generation. 14 levels with their own theme. But do not worry. You'll play just 5 of them on each run. Tank modules, bowling, throwable items, bombs, spoons, ? And much more. Absurd power-ups that will transform your spaceship into dangerous killing machines. magnificently crafted chiptune music composed by Sino Ryu. S-I-N-O Ryu. Sino Ryu. Mad events, remixing the action. Multiple modes, hardcore, ultra-hardcore, boss rush mode and chaos mode, secrets and mysteries, difficult but fair action, all dangers are well telegraphed, surreal funny situations, enemy bosses, and 16-bit graphics with a modern twist, pumped effects and screen shake. And that is your features as from the game developer.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It sounds like a lot, but there is a lot to the game. There's a lot, like, you get your money's worth with this game.
Well, yeah, exactly. And so, as you go into it, so how did we play it is the first question. What system, where did you play it at?
Yeah, and it's coming back to me, us talking about this. because what was this the one where I was like the hitbox is weird, or was that the previous game that
previous. We
played? That was the previous game. Okay, I'm getting it mixed up because we played two shoot 'em ups in a row.
It's been a while. It's been a while since you've been playing.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, so to put things into perspective, obviously I played this on Steam Deck.
Uh-huh.
I played on the deck. What did you end up playing it on?
I played it on my super ultra wide setup here. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I've also got another screen off to the side here that's in tate mode, whatever you want to call it. So I played it in tate mode, and I actually played the demo that they had on Steam.
Good call.
Which they give you four complete levels to play through. So nice. Even the demo is really generous. I really enjoyed the game. The aesthetics, like the visual style, is really cool. It's like pixelated, but really not. Oh, there's a whole lot of like the way I compare it to
there's like particles.
Yeah, particles. Flash. But also there's like weird zoom in, kind of like in Neo Geo games,
like Mode 7.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. Pretty cool. It's a really cool aesthetic. And then like, you know, it said that there's that dash mechanic. Yeah, super cool. Like there's, you can dodge bullets. You can make your ship like disappear for a second. And it's really strategic how you have to do it. And you have to do it. It's not just like
you have to do it.
There are obstacles.
And you only go in one direction too.
Yeah.
You
can't just backwards. So you basically like phase out and then phase back in.
Yeah, so you can't, like, if something's coming from behind, you can't phase backward. You have to strategically plan how you phase. Yeah. So I wrote notes as I go through, because otherwise I would have forgotten. Thank goodness I did notes.
yeah, I didn't.
So I wrote down, it's a vertical shoot 'em up, so you know you're going vertically, with tons of humor, pixel-inspired graphics, and a retro soundtrack. Lots of fun modes pop up as you play. Like, it just changes the aspect of it. It's intense. The roguelike aspects where the levels change each time you play. It's a bullet hell shoot 'em up. The ship slows as you hold the shoot button. And you also have a dash, which makes it very skill-based. So you can actually avoid hits, which I really like. Interestingly, the first time I played through, the second level had warp pipes. And you can go different warp pipes.
Yeah, that's right. It does have warp pipes.
And you're a crawler on the ground. And as you go on the ground, you can jump on the ground pieces and jump through stuff. So it actually has a different feel than the dash. So then you can jump and avoid different pieces. And usually at the end of each section of the ground section, there'd be a power-up or health. There's plenty of generous health in regular mode. I wrote down something hilarious, one of the bosses, which I assume was not in the demo. Zombie Hitler.
No, that was the first boss.
And his giant eyeball.
Yes.
That is a wild first boss.
And that's indicative of how crazy these bosses are in this game. The very first one is you fight Zombie Hitler. Yeah.
And then he has another form where he's like little mini Hitler or something, and he's like running all around. And the second boss that I went through was a giant crab thingy. It was like a giant crab thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of them I actually fought in a crawler mode where I was on crawler mode when I was fighting a boss, and there's a little P switch above him. So once you actually get the boss to where you could stun him, you can actually just go up to the P switch, jump on it, and kills the boss.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it was like hilarious. And now this is probably the first one where I actually was playing the game after the first couple weeks, because I assumed we would record, but we're playing tag. I was playing in the morning before work. It's a small burst. I would play through a version, because I mean it's pretty short as you're going through, and I wasn't good enough to go through a whole like five levels. I started to try different ships. So I tried another ship. Shots were slow, but could be sped up with power ups. So it was interesting. It's like you start off like non-advantageous with a different ship. But then when you get the power-ups, it actually becomes more overpowered. Mm-hmm. He's also very slow when you were shooting. So when you hold the shot button, he moves even slower. But it also meant that I could avoid all the shots when things became bullet hell. I could like weave and carve. And I love a carve on my my bullet hell shooters.
Yeah, it's like it. So just like that, Dodonpachi does the same thing. And I love that about Dodonpachi.
Yes. Yeah, all the cave shooters from the early 2000s. Yeah. I love that style. Here's the first funniest power up that I got, and I got it a couple times. Did you ever get the shitty shot?
No.
I got the shitty shot. It's literally like it just goes in a circle around you, and it's just like so. Instead of shooting like fast up, it just goes around you. But it was super powerful. The shitty shot was actually powerful when it would hit, but you would have to like dodge shit. So hopefully that the shitty shot would hit something.
Oh,
gosh. However. I used it to beat the second crab boss because there's a store right after and you get a laser options. They give you two laser options that shoot these super powerful lasers. So then you have this powerful shitty shot that's going around you, but it's almost like the missile in Gradius or Life Force when you through and you get like the missiles that pop down. So now I have these shitty missile looking things, but then I got the lasers that go, and it ended up being a really, really solid OP build. It was fun as hell. The third level that I went through is when I got to the ground jumps and had different timing than the dash, and that's when I jumped on the exclamation to kill him. I ended up dying in the fourth level on that playthrough. And then like throughout the week, I would play a couple different times. I played through, once I got played the third different ship, it unlocked a fourth ship, and the fourth ship was a different character. And what I'm tracking is that like that one is insane character that has tons of different wild power ups and stuff. And that's the thing. This game is over the top humor.
Mm-hmm.
Glad it got a physical, but we were doing this as of the games don't have a physical. We're trying to find hidden games.
Well, is it on the Switch? Maybe.
No.
Not
physically on the Switch. It is on Switch, but not physically. So, but it is physically on PlayStation, which means you can preserve it. I highly recommend it. What other notes you got? How many times did you play through the demo?
I played through the demo twice because I knew there was some stuff that I missed. You mentioned those warp pipes. I actually missed a couple of those warp pipes, like, in the stage. It takes you to, like, bonus portions of the stage and then just weird stuff. But I wish I would have taken notes like you did because, just like you, I played it early on. It was, like, while I was sick that I played it. So it's been a while, and we talked about it before, and I couldn't even – before we came on and did this podcast, like, I couldn't even remember if we had talked about it on a podcast or if we talked about it outside the podcast.
Definitely. We were both talking with broke voices and stuff, but we couldn't record. Sure. I still got a little bit of a cough, but like
it's... same. And it was like 2 weeks ago that I was sick, but I really enjoyed it. And like, you know, that dash mechanic, it's one of the main, I don't want to call it a gimmick because it's not really a gimmick in the game. It should feel unnatural because, like, I don't think I've ever played another bullet hell shooter with a dash like that, a phase out dash. But it feels really natural when it really shouldn't. They did a really good job of implementing it and, like, balancing it. So, like, where it sounds OP that you can just, like, go through stuff, it's not. And they'll throw situations in where, like, there's a whole bunch of stuff that you have to go through. So you have to dash. Yeah. And then there's like all these like warp points that you go to.
Once you get the timing, it feels natural.
Yeah. And it's super flashy too. Like it's awesome to look at. So I really enjoyed the game. And if I don't have it on my shelf, which I think I do, I'm pretty sure I already own it like on PS4. If I don't, I'm going to pick it up.
Yeah. So let's give it our bullshit grade. That we do. Where will you place it? And is it in the backlog or is it something that you'll get to when you get to it?
I hesitate to give anything an S tier. That's just crazy. But it's definitely an A title to me. And it's not going to be in the backlog. If I own it, I'm going to play it this week. I will.
Yeah. So it is not going in the backlog for me right now because there's so many amazing games. There's just we're in the worst thing as gamers. We have a million amazing games to play.
It's crazy right now.
And there's two games I still haven't even bought from this week that we'll talk about.
Uh-huh.
But it's wild. I think my video just froze too, which we're fine.
Yeah, I think so.
Audio's still good. But that's the wild thing, right? Is there's so many games. So I it's a solid A game. Absolutely solid A game. Mm-hmm. Great for a shoot 'em up. Highly, highly recommended for anybody who enjoys shoot 'em ups.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure. But yeah. So A title. That might be the first universal A that we've had for homework.
Yeah, it was an easy to give it that grade because it just feels really polished. Whereas some indie titles, especially ones that are like humorous like that, they go to the humor to like distract you from other things that might be wrong with the game, but that's not the case for this one.
Yeah. So as my video plays games, you'll have to put like a crazy little cartoon over me or something.
Yeah, I'm just gonna put like now loading.
But like a little smiley on me or something.
Now loading Jeff.
Yeah. So instead of doing the retro randomizer this time, I actually have a game that I randomly found during our hiatus with the randomizer that I feel like we need to play, and it'll be freaking hilarious.
Uh-oh.
So the game, I would call it Castlevania 2 Simon's Quest, but completely overhauled.
Okay. I'm intrigued.
However, it's hentai.
It's hentai? Wait, what? It's anime or it's hentai?
Hentai!
Oh, gosh.
So, I recommend anybody who's going to play and follow along, there is a safe for work mode version. Not play the not safe for work one. It is
Oh, boy.
It is called Midnight Castle Succubus.
Midnight Castle Succubus.
It is Castlevania 2 completely overhauled, and I've been playing it, and I've been enjoying it. It's so good. However, play it with safe for work mode on. Even when you look it up on YouTube, look up SFW, safe for work mode, because if not, you go around and save like village girls in the safe for work mode. Those girls are being tentacle porn.
Oh, yes. Okay. Tentacles.
Monster porn. Stuff. Or monster porn or something.
Like, hey, Nat, come over here. Check out this game I'm playing.
Yeah. Or all the bosses that you're fighting. Instead of being a giant, like, water beast, it'll be a naked girl water beast.
Oh, my.
But the game itself, freaking amazing. And there's surprises. So if you can get past the first surprise, then it'll be a really fun talk. Because I got past the first surprise. And apparently there's like 2/3 of the game beyond it.
All right.
So it's kind of like a Link to the Past thing where you're going and doing the first initial part and then you go into the dark world and you're like, holy crap. Like it does that.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Which is crazy. The graphics are classic Nintendo style, but they're stylized to be indie. So Midnight Castle Succubus.
All righty.
I'm telling you, I've been enjoying it. I'm going to jump back in a little so I can take some notes. But
it's written down.
Yeah, dude, that's going to be a fun one. So what else we have been playing? Have you been playing anything else outside of the big one?
No, nothing outside of the big one, no.
Okay. So I got a couple of notes from stuff that I did play, but small, short notes. Sea of Stars, I did continue it a bit, tiny bit, but that was it. Nothing worth like talking about, but again, it's freaking Chrono Trigger amazing.
That game looks amazing. I absolutely plan on playing that game at some point.
And I finally went back to RPG time that we were talking about.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that. Wait a second, I ordered that. I still haven't got it.
Damn.
I gotta check my email.
Interestingly, I started playing it because there was a DLC that popped up. Like it was an update. So I went to it. The DLC adds a tutorial mode. And tutorial modes in video games suck. Like, oh, it's lame. No, it's a whole nother mini dungeon. Like, it's a tutorial mini dungeon. There's a whole story to it. There's little buttons you gotta do and press and play through. Everything is so well crafted. Like, the game is so fun. It's a giant interactive storybook. It's what I would have wanted when I was like a kid playing games. Like,
that's really fun.
Like, it is so freaking good, man. Like, I just enjoy that so much.
Yeah.
That game is in my backlog. That is like one that I will absolutely play. You gotta look up, see where yours is. Now, the other thing that I played, and I have a story for it. I have Xbox Game Pass that works on Steam Deck. So I don't have an Xbox Series X, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I have Xbox Game Pass still from the Xbox One. And you can put an app on the Steam Deck and have it use streaming mode so I can play Xbox Game Pass on my Steam Deck. That's how I played Tunic back in the day. Was on my actual Steam Deck. So yeah. I actually tried out, because I was wanting to, I tried out Starfield. Have you played and heard Starfield as you're searching
for your game? I've heard of Starfield, yes, but I have not played it. I know a lot of people are playing it. But
it's huge. So yeah. I feel like from a backlog perspective, it's not realistic for us to find and play this into the backlog. But yeah. It's like Fallout, but in freaking space, dude. Like, it is insane. So, like, I was going off on the initial tutorial adventure, and you're like, there's this creepy shit that's happening and different psychological stuff. And then I ended up, like, going forward, getting past that part, getting into space and flying around and getting into, like, a Star Wars-style starship
fight. Like, battles and stuff. Man.
And then I was like going around and I blew up the bad guys and I was going to get their items, you know, so sort of like in Fallout when you go up and loot a bad guy, right?
Yeah.
And as I was doing that, I didn't have my Steam Deck plugged in and it powered off.
But, great.
And then I went to bed and I haven't went back to my Xbox Game Pass. But Starfield, dude, like I feel like from a scope creep perspective, like, that shit could be crazy. You find your game yet? Where's it at? I know you're
I definitely ordered it back in.
You got mentally sidetracked, I could tell.
I'm sorry. I want to know where this game is. It's pissing me off.
This is great podcast reporting, listeners. Great podcast reporting.
I'm sorry. Kristen's
looking for his freaking game.
I apologize. I'll look later.
You let me know when you're ready to continue.
I'm ready.
Yeah, because they're right now you're looking up a tracking number for all the listeners. Now we got to find out, where's it at?
Yeah, no, it's asking me to like log into my PlayAsia account, and I don't remember the password, so that's definitely not good podcast material.
Great.
Hey, let's hang on, guys, while I reset my password. But apparently at the same time that I ordered RPG Time, I ordered Dodonpachi Blissful Death Reincarnation. So yeah. I'm also owed that one by PlayAsia.
Interesting. Yeah, I know. I mean,
but Starfield is a game that I don't plan on playing myself because I consider that kind of a game life consuming.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. And that's where I'm not like I would love the game. It goes as similar to another game released this week called Spider-Man 2.
Hey, yeah.
And to me, if I played that, it's the same as Final Fantasy 14. It's just they're so big. Not 14.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy 16.
I knew what you meant. Yeah, 16. But
16. But they're just so big that I just don't have the time. And it has to be a major IP franchise like Zelda Tears of the Kingdom.
Yes.
To truly have me put everything on pause and dedicate that much time to it. Because literally we're pausing everything to play one of those games.
Yeah. And, you know, like Spider-Man 2 came out and then there were two other major games. Well, I consider one of them obviously is major. The other one is major from a storied franchise standpoint. And both of those games are more bite-sized and manageable.
Are you talking about Sonic Superstars?
I am.
And I have not bought it yet because
I haven't either.
But I do want to buy a copy.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Interestingly, though, the very first review that I came across, because I try to avoid reviews, but I'm on YouTube. was Pete Dore, who I know from a long time ago. Used to be on podcast with John Lester, and I met him at conventions and hung out with him. He trashed it. Didn't like it at all.
Really?
In every other review, people love it. Every other one. So I feel like I came across the one negative dude, because now I'm coming across people for the other game talking like, oh, it's not that great or something like that. You're getting the people that are trying to get noticed by talking smack on something.
Sure, that's just being different.
Yeah. So I've only heard, for the actual reviews that I was, after I saw him trashing, I'm like, all right, let me see some more reviews. And I did some reviews that, like, Sonic Superstars looks amazing. Definitely need to add it to the backlog.
Mm-hmm.
I need to. But I want to finish my current game first. And
what's your current game, Jeff?
Shall we talk it real quick?
Let's talk it.
All right. Super Mario Wonder is obviously what we've been alluding to.
Yeah, that's right.
Holy cow. Super Mario Brothers Wonder. And what's interesting is like, you told me what you like were mentioning to me, how it made you feel, like the whole like happy and smiling. And I'm trying to put my thumb on, how does it feel? Because like everybody's saying best Mario game since Super Mario World. And I could feel it, but it's not quite like that for me.
I agree with you.
Trying to put my thumb on it, but go ahead and talk your perspective.
To compare something to a game that's as groundbreaking as Super Mario World, then the game has to be groundbreaking, or, you know, in that way. And I just don't think that it is, even though, and the wonder, I almost said wonderful, the awesome thing about Mario Wonder is that there are surprises around every corner. That's its gimmick, because the wonder flower that you get in every stage, you never know what's going to happen. And most of the time you're pleasantly surprised, and it's really fun.
I think the coolest one so far is the singing piranha plants.
Absolutely. Like, hands down. I was like, it's hilarious. Okay. I was smiling so much, man.
Dude, it's just, and the thing is, so from my perspective, where I'm currently approaching it, obviously got it this weekend. At the time of this recording, it's like a Sunday. I got it on Friday, so I played it Friday evening for the first time, my time. I played through a world, and then I got into the second world, and then the second time I sat down, I played through world two. And then yesterday on Saturday, I played through world three, and then today I started to play through world four. And so I'm going through it very strategically, but I'm also not going 100% completion, because I tend to not enjoy things when I have to replay levels over and over again as I'm playing a first playthrough. So I'm trying not to do it this time. I'm always bad about that. I want to get all the things. I want to get all the wonder
seeds. Yeah, all the coins, all the flagpole, pops, and
And it tracks it all for us, which is terrible. It's great, but it's terrible. But they ingeniously put a menu on the world map where you can like look at and see what you're missing. So I'm kind of just going through, trying to do all the levels, all the fun stuff, and then I'll go through and fight the bosses. I think I'm just at the boss of World 4. And actually, correction, I played World 4 yesterday evening. So I played World 3 in the morning, played World 4 in the evening, and then I went to dinner. So then I went to dinner and had some margaritas. So I'm not going to play the game while I'm liquored up, because now.
Why not? I mean, that would make the Wonder Flower even more potent.
It'd be fun. But it was so the things that are interesting with it, obviously the main gimmick is the Wonder Flower. And then like other things, like there was one spot where a wall of enemies are chasing you and you're running and you're hitting power blocks to keep them off. That was
super fun.
Morphing into a Goomba. That was fun.
Yes.
And that's when I figured out what it reminds me of. So it is the Odyssey of 2D games.
Sure. Yeah.
So for me, like Mario Odyssey took the 3D formula and give it a modern shine with accessibility and all those things. And that's what Super Mario Brothers Wonder does, is it takes the classic tried and true formula. And I would love for somebody, and if not us, to compare how many unique levels does Mario World and Mario 3 have per world, and how many does Mario Wonder have per world?
Yeah.
because it might be similar. Because the one reason why I was comparing it to like the Odyssey version of 2D is because there's a lot of little break time levels. And I saw people complaining about these, but I'm like, it's literally a break time level to keep it open for younger players.
Yeah.
So you'll go through one where you're just dashing and you get a seed, or you're
you're like, hey, go run. Sweet.
You're just jumping in the air and you get a seed, or you go talk to an NPC in a house at the beginning of each level and you get a seed. Like, it's those type of things that it gives you a little endorphin spike. It's to make the younger players.
Yeah, it's fun progression. It's like not grindy.
Exactly. And I feel like the levels are about the same length as a Super Mario World level. The Super Mario World and Super Mario 3, if you go back and play them, they're short levels. They're short, fun, crafted levels. And that's what this is. These are short, fun, crafted levels. If you don't get the Wonder Flower. If you get the Wonder Flower, it extends it to another gimmick within the gimmick.
Yeah. And so here's another thing that I was thinking about. And, I mean, it's something we have to mention because, you know, obviously, like, with this one, we have completely changed the aesthetic. We've completely changed the animation. We've completely changed some of the sound effects, and the voice acting for the characters is different. And this is the first time in 17 years that Nintendo has changed up the 2D Mario formula.
There's 12 playable characters.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, we've been stuck on the new, quote unquote, new Super Mario Brothers style of 2D games since 2006 on the Nintendo DS. Which is it's insane. And, you know, the thing that I was thinking about is, like, you know, Mario 1 and Mario 2, traditional Mario 2 on the NES and Famicom, used the Mario 1 formula. And then after that, you had Mario 2, which was our Mario 2. We had Mario 3, which is a different aesthetic. And then you had Mario World, which was a different aesthetic. So, like, we went through, you know, basically a decade where we had a whole bunch of different kinds of 2D Mario. And then an entire decade where 2D Mario was kind of forgotten with all the 3D stuff coming out. Mario 64, Mario Odyssey.
Well, if you think about it.
I mean, not Odyssey, Sunshine.
From Mario 64 to Sunshine. So once it hit Sunshine, we got a standardization on the way Mario looks.
Yes.
From Sunshine through Galaxy through the new series, they changed Mario and started to have a standard, which made it cookie
cutter. Yeah, and now it's still cookie cutter with Odyssey. I mean, it's really not all that different with 3D Mario, but this is the first time in like a generation of gamers, maybe even two generations of gamers, where they have something new, and maybe that's where it feels like Mario World, where they changed everything up. And maybe that's why it feels like Mario World.
And they did give us some power-ups, too. Some new power-ups, which...
I wish there were more power-ups.
Well, to me, there are. And I'll tell you why I say that. So, you have the elephant, which I feel like super fun. He moves a lot faster than I thought. I thought he's going to be slow and be annoying. He's It's cool. You got the little water spots where you can do water and you can move stuff. The drill is amazing. I love that because you can hit enemies and you can pound them and you can go into the ground and do all that. The bubble is kind of meh.
I'm not a fan of the bubble.
However, there are a shit ton of power-ups because you got all of the badges. The badges, adds a power-up. So you get the dolphin badge. You can go in the water, move faster, kick. You get my favorite one. Is the damn spin badge where you jump and then you hit the R button, you do like a high spin jump, like almost like a double jump. There's dash badges. Now, did you get any of the expert badges yet?
I'm going to say no. I don't think so. 'Cause
I got this one, this expert badge. Mario keeps jumping. He's like a spring, like the old spring power suit, but he keeps jumping. And he's like, bong, bong, bong. And you can put that badge on and play every level with the spring badge.
Like that, cool.
Man. And they're like crystal looking, the badges. I got one. I found it.
I definitely don't have one then.
That's why I think I messaged you on day one or whatever, and I was in World 2, and I found the special world. And when I found the special world, I died, and I didn't complete that level because I wasn't ready for it because I just had learned, and it's like tier difficulty. But I went to a different area, and that's where I found, because I think each world or each section has a secret special world path. Because after I went through and completed the whole map, because I just went through the main map and there's levels in the map that you can do. Once I completed the whole circle of the map, it opened a special world portion, and I went to the level as well. But I can't remember where I found that special badge, but I found it. And I'm 100% stubbornly not going to any guides or anything until I beat the game. Once I beat the game completely, until I'm willing to, and when I'm willing to beat the game. After I do all of the things, then if I want to OCD beat everything and find all the extra stuff I'm missing, then I'll look it up. But right now, I'm doing it as blind as possible. But I found the cool expert badges. So each one of those badges to me is a power-up.
That's a good point.
I haven't played the game with the Yoshis or Nabbit yet because you can't use power-ups. But you don't take damage, which is good for kiddos. So, I mean, my daughter would probably like playing it with one of those because then she can kind of talk smack to me as I die.
My one gripe is that they don't have an orange Yoshi.
Orange Yoshi.
It's my favorite Yoshi.
Did you mess with the online gameplay at all?
I didn't. I'm not even, like, connected online, so I don't even know, like, what that entails.
So it's pretty cool. I tried connecting to one of the little online beacons, and then I had none of the friends, because the thing is that when we started Premium, I turned off all my games roster to.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I have to.
So,
We can't have people seeing what we're playing.
That being said, though, I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but I literally created game. I created a room, and I was running around. You can apparently do races and stuff, so we can go into a level. There'll be a block, and you can click a button, and then any of your friends will be noted. Be like, hey, we're doing a race, and you can race through the levels, which is cool. But for that, then I noticed as I was playing on day, on Friday when everybody had the game, that they have all the ghosts running through the game. I constantly see players playing. And they're all in the level as I'm playing through, which is actually distracting a little bit because there's so many.
Yeah, that would be.
And then there's people that put up posts. So it's the little signs that you can buy in the shops in the game.
Yeah, I didn't like that little extra. Like, that's kind of dumb to me. Like, those little collectibles.
Gashapon.
Yeah.
But the little signs, when you come across them, if you die, you get a little ghost that pops up. And you can go up to it and you can revive yourself at the little posts. Or if somebody's actually playing through the level, you can actually go hit them and you can revive yourself too and not die. Mm-hmm. So it's like you're playing multiplayer, but online. So it's kind of cool. And then there's this heart thing. So if you put up posts and people run by it, you get heart points.
That's what that is. Yeah. Like anytime I've paused the game, like I have 5 zeros next to my hearts. I was wondering how you get hearts.
Yeah. I think I have 1,000 at this point, just running around. And then if you all hit the flagpole at the same time, you get hearts, and it's like little teamwork stuff, little teamwork points. But so if you keep it online, some of that stuff will naturally pop up as people are playing it. It's something that can only be played now, though. So what do you think about stuff like that from a game preservation perspective, right?
If
you're not playing it live when everybody's playing it this first week, as people stop playing it, there'll be less participation on there, so the experience will be different. So, like, right now, there's people all over the damn place playing the game.
That's a good point. That happens with any game, in any server, because, like, like we've seen, what's about to get shut down? The 3DS eShop and the Wii U eShop, is that correct?
Yeah.
So these things aren't forever. The interest in these games isn't forever. Maybe a game like Mario Wonder will have a player base and people longer to play online with for longer because it's a Mario game. I would say, like, even for people like me that generally don't play online, that's actually you've inadvertently talked me into doing it because I would like to experience that, and you won't be able to experience that forever.
Well, it's the same thing with like Mario 99, F-Zero 99. Mm-hmm. The first couple weeks you play it, it's probably chaos. I bet if we go play F-Zero 99 right now on a Sunday, it's not going to be as overloaded now that it's been a few weeks, because the one thing that that we've learned about the current gaming landscape is everybody, there's so many games out there, everybody's fickle and they're moving on to the next thing.
Yeah, that's so, right.
Mario Wonder, we're in Mario Wonder week right now. That's why we're going to have that as part of our topical, as part of the thumbnail and everything, because it's topical. People look it up right now. Next week, not so much. Next week, not so much. If we recorded and talked about Mario Wonder as a bullshit homework in like 2 weeks from now, it wouldn't be as popular as us talking about it today. Right now, as it just came out, because it'll be super cool, and we could talk Mario Wonder and Project Starship X. Like, it'll be Mario Wonder will get us the views, get us the hits. Plus,
for sure,
we've been playing it, and we want to talk about it because it's a Mario game. Like Mario, Zelda, Metroids, when all those come out, that becomes an event for me.
Well, yeah, I just said it's been 17 years. Think about that, 17 years since they changed up the 2D Mario formula. That's crazy. Dude, I was deployed in the Middle East. I remember I got a copy of New Super Mario Brothers and a DS Lite at the same time. Like, I ordered them online and had them delivered to the desert and got to play those. But it was like right after Katrina those came out. That's so long ago. It's like a lifetime ago.
And I was like out of the loop during that game release for some reason with the DS and everything, because it was like I was moving toward more consoleized playing games, and I just wasn't playing handheld as much. And so realistically, I played it later as I bought it used. And it was awesome when I play it, and maybe even emulation for me as well. And then later on, like getting the Wii version, and asshole Mario is what we called it, and all. Like, it's just, I feel like this is an awesome experience being able to play a new 2D Mario.
And yeah, people really should, like, just soak it in and enjoy it as much as they can, because, dude, it doesn't happen every day. And Zelda games don't happen every day, especially ones that redefine the genre.
Exactly.
So, you know, we take these things for granted, especially right now where we're in this kind of timeline where all these just amazing games are coming out. We're very, very spoiled as gamers right now.
Dude, it's insane.
Dude, it's nuts. Like, I you know, we lament about how little time we have to play. And, you know, we have adult responsibilities and jobs and all this other stuff. But right now, more and more, we just... we're scratching and clawing to find that time, because there's so many good games to play. Like next month with Super Mario RPG coming out, there's no way I'm not playing that.
This year we have Super Mario RPG, we have the Princess Peach game, which looks fun.
Yeah.
And we have Mario vs. Donkey Kong Reimagined.
Yeah, that's so too.
Like there's three major Mario IPs that are coming out. That Mario RPG is coming. It's happening. And this is where it's an interesting piece, and I feel like we gotta talk about it, is tackling the backlog, dude. Tackling the backlog. Because as new games come out, and we have other things, such as we got all the creative projects we're working on, plus, like, I'm still with the duty in the Army, so, like, my time is so short right now.
I know.
And it's not even the backlog of new stuff that I'm worried about, because I'm also overloading indie games that I want to play on my Steam Deck. But I want to go back and continue to play all the classics, because I've done that throughout my entire life. Is I love going back and playing Link to the Past every year. I love going back and playing. I haven't went through and played through like Mario 3 and Mario World like I used to, just like chill and play it and do it on a weekend. And how do we re-envision the backlog with the current massive scope of games that continue to be released? And that's, they're awesome games.
Good question.
I've had different ways that I do it and track things, but it's just tracking mechanisms and not actually getting around to playing them.
You have to be really methodical about it. Kind of like, you know, how, you know, I've talked about how there's so many different things that I want to work on. We want to work on as like creative people. But in order to keep ourselves sane and actually have things moving forward all the time and not have things stagnate, you really have to be methodical and schedule it to happen. So if you don't schedule a time to do these things, you know, and you can apply this to the backlog, then you'll never get around to playing it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's one of those things where, like, even the games that we've released with Premium, like, I've played every single game that we've released, but I haven't mastered every single game that we've released. And there's games that I want to master. I haven't gotten all the power-ups still for Robot Named Fight, and I've beaten through the game multiple times, and I haven't gotten all the power-ups yet. I haven't found the Rush Dog yet, and I know it's there, and I wrote the guide on it and talked with it, and it's like, dude, I still haven't done it. And it's like, dude, so many.
I know.
And it's like, how do you tackle that effectively?
Yeah.
That is the million-dollar question. That'll probably be the question that I put on the podcast when we do the for all the listeners.
Yeah.
Is that how – what do you recommend we do to tactfully, tactically, however, tackle the backlog? Because once I'm retired from the military, I'll have an extra 40 to 60 hours a week that I'll not be doing Army stuff, but I'll still have other responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So – how do we tackle it? What do we do? And how do you become methodical without it not being unfun? Because you got to keep it
fun. Yeah, at that point it becomes a job, or it feels like it if you're obligated to do it.
Because if you think about it, it's fun, but like going through the backlog, for example, if I have 100 games that are classics that I remember playing as a kid, like which one do I pick?
Mm-hmm.
Scope Creep. Like, which one do I pick to play?
Yeah.
And that'd be the same thing with newer stuff. Like, if I go back one generation or two generations, hell, PS4, if I go to PS3, I haven't played any of the classics. The PS3. Like, Ashura's Wrath is a classic one.
So good. That one's amazing.
Never played it. And it's in my, I own it.
I recommend, at the very least, the DLC where you have to fight it. Wait, do you know about it? I don't want to spoil anything for you.
Yeah, I've been on the internet.
Okay, Akuma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so
it's just crazy.
Like, there's so many games out there like that are just like, and the thing is that I started this backlog stuff for the PS3 era, at the PS3 era.
Mm.
So, you know, I would, because deployments and stuff like that myself, like, we would just go through certain games and that's what I would play. The other piece is do we like maybe just close ourselves off to everything but one console? Like, all right, we're going to play TurboGrafx-16 only.
It's a little easier for you since you're kind of isolated on the island without your other consoles. But I mean, you've got Steam and your Switch and whatever. So
Analog Pocket. So it's like everything. And then I got that Odroid Go or whatever it is.
Odroid
has all the arcade stuff. So it's like, I got that too. So I still have all the things. It's still insane.
Sure.
And we have a PS5, so I got those too. But yeah, like, it's like, how do you tackle the backlog? And when I get back to the States and I get all my collection back, it's going to be overwhelming.
we'll have to revisit this this topic whenever you know, in a couple years when you're back.
See how
you're dealing.
Well, we will see, because there's certain ideas. But so the thing is that you and I have an idea of talking about projects, a new book series, a series of stuff. I think we're going to start it because nobody's doing it. A specific collectors-focused book series, like a collector-focused book series. Mm-hmm. So it'll go hand-in-hand with the podcast, talk about collecting all the time. And we can probably bring on collectors onto the podcast even to talk collecting. But like, doing something, you know, we would love it if we could do it quarterly, but that's probably not realistic. But like, some kind of digest that we can do for game collecting would be freaking awesome. Keep it small factor, small form. I'm thinking the size of like a Switch Player magazine. And there was another book series that I had on episode 118 alluded to that I still will be working on. I actually finished formatting that over the break.
That one that I almost spoiled. I'm like, oh wait, we're not supposed to talk about that.
however, it's that one's completely laid out now, and I'm doing writing.
Very nice.
Yeah. So, and then I got another million other projects that I'm working on at all times because that's just what we do. Yeah, I actually did get through year three of the Switch, going through a lot of stuff. I'm almost done with the book now, which is crazy. All that'll be left will be stories, which will be after it goes to Kickstarter anyways, because backers will give stories and all that. So it'll be fun. But yeah, that's where that is. From a book perspective, my NES book is currently in production. It's being printed. I am just like yours that you're going to give an update on. They're going to the centralized ShipBob hub. Some of yours are going to you as well. But they're going to the centralized ShipBob hub, which means I have a whole process I have to do during business hours, which sucks for me being on an island. Yeah. But I got to coordinate with the warehouse to get the current printed paperwork, because there's a whole way of receiving at a major warehouse. Because try not to overload premium with shipping is been one of the things we're trying to.
Sure. Yeah, the books are, especially since, we only have more and more games to ship, and adding books to that, especially multiple books, it definitely overloads them. So,
yeah, exactly. And it's prevented me from being able to do like a second chance sale for Switch Collector Volume 2 Part 2, because they've been so overwhelmed with game shipments that I'm trying. So I may move stuff to, move those pallets over to the ShipBob warehouse too, so that way I can just ease it. Maybe in the future. Depends. But so how's everything going with yours? I know you've been working on it. I probably know more of an update, but the listeners don't have an update.
Yeah, still working on it, obviously. I've got only really a couple of major consoles to go, ones with big libraries. Currently, I'm working on the Xbox 360, which I have a good list for. It's just that the images are kind of hit and miss. So it's going to take me a long time methodically to go through, make sure that I have all the ESRB labels, because one of the packs that I downloaded, people just don't care whether it's we were talking about different rating systems like PEGI or, Japanese one. I keep running into that where the images that I've got in this folder are not the ones that I want. So it's going to be time consuming. But
it's a nightmare, dude. Welcome.
I know. Yeah,
but you're doing it all at once because you're insane.
I knew exactly what I got myself into. So I'm still on pace to finish by. I've got a goal of sometime in December. So we're good there. And we discussed how we just got the book quotes. Back the printing quotes, I shored up the funding for that, so that'll be good to go. I'm just having fun. Like it's super fun. I'm in a privileged position where I have the luxury of not having a day job now. I think I may have mentioned it on 118, but for anyone who didn't hear that, I actually quit my job at United States Strategic Command. Nothing against the job, nothing against that lifestyle, but it started to become a grind, and I just didn't really enjoy it as much as I used to. So I decided to go full-time graphic design and go back to school for it, which will be extremely fun. I'll be going to the University of Nebraska at Omaha. And going through their graphic design program and actually become a real quote unquote graphic designer.
You'll be a real boy.
I'm going to be a real boy.
Real boy. Now, it's the thing that's really cool. And, something similar once I'm getting to my retirement from the military, like you've already done, like I'm going to be doing something similar where I'm going after the things that I want to do. And going wholeheartedly into all the projects and the companies and all that stuff. It's going to be fun. Going to keep it going.
That's what it's a privilege to have served in the Air Force. And I know you feel the same way about serving in the Army, but you really do give a lot of yourself during that, 20 plus year period. So it's not as though you or I haven't earned the right to do something that makes us happy after we've done that service. So
it's a sacrifice not only for ourselves, but for our families.
And absolutely. Absolutely. I give so much credit to my wife for putting up with how much I was gone. Like, I was constantly on the road. I was probably like, you know, we've been married 17 years now, and I think I was gone probably 6 or 7 of those years on the road, if you can imagine. So.
Oh, it's insane. And that's the one thing, like, based on my rank and position now, is I've gotten to in public thank my wife a few times in front of all the soldiers and everything, because it is something that needs to be stated multiple times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, within this last tour, my wife has made it pretty clear that she's wants to establish a home now and stop moving. Mm-hmm. So that's where the decision has been, like, all right, so my 20 years, I'm done.
And you've earned it. You absolutely have.
Yeah. I mean, my body is hurting.
yes, I relate.
And we're in the same age group, and I'm still going. It's hurting. I joined later. So I joined after college. So it's just, I'm finishing out my time. But there'll be some extra stuff I'll be able to focus on. And it's just funny, as people always ask me, oh, how do you do it? Like, well, you work a full-time job and do the side projects and other businesses. And I'm like, well, just imagine when I have an extra 40 to 60 hours a week. Like, and the thing is I'm not going to do quote unquote more. It's going to be more focused, more attention realized. And I'll be able to got maybe some backlog stuff too, and do little family things that we've been wanting to do. And it'll be cool. And it's an interesting thing. Privilege that people enjoy what I do. And I know you're the same way, that people enjoy the stuff that we're putting out. You know, we'll continue to go till the wheels come off, and as long as people are buying physical games, we'll make some cool physical releases. Like, it's
very gratifying and satisfying and humbling too. I know you feel the same way whenever we're at conventions and people are really appreciative of the things that we've done and that we've designed and we've produced. It's very fulfilling to hear from the actual public who, you know, consumes our goods, hearing from them that they actually appreciate it. It's really cool because, you know, it just working on it behind a desk, you know, you're in a vacuum. You don't get to hear those things. But whenever you actually step out into the public and get to hear from the gamers who benefit from it, it's really satisfying.
Well, and, once I'm retired, we will up our game from a guest perspective a little bit. Like, I'll get you in the circuit here a little bit. There's been some international ones I've been invited to, but I've turned it down since I'm on duty. But I've also told them in a couple years I'm down. So there'll be a lot of openings, and we'll have to figure out a way to strategically get books out to these places and games and all that stuff.
Yep, absolutely.
That's the craziness, dude. On the other side, premium. We had the premium direct, which I assume has been since we've recorded.
Yes.
The premium direct went insane. Pre-orders have been going for both Anuchard and Lonesome Village.
Yeah.
And then we had second chance sales for a few of our games. So I do know at the time of this recording, Raji's second chance is about to hit, which is people have been asking for forever. Now on a bonus side, which I don't even know if you're tracking, Eagle Island and Love 3 are in our warehouse now.
Yeah, buddy. No, I heard. Oh, I can't wait to get my hands on that. Both those games, Love 3, but especially Eagle Island Twist. I had so much fun with those games, completing those. Man, so much fun.
And creation of the physical items.
Yeah, dude.
So, it's so cool. And so those have arrived. So customers will begin getting their copies. We also have a pallet that goes to Retroware because they wanted to get some bare bones copies, which means without Slipcase and Sleeve. They wanted some for them so they can go to convention. So when like the nerd James goes around to stuff Retroware goes, they'll be having Toxic Crusaders, and then they'll have like our physicals there too. As well as probably going on Amazon, I would assume, or their website to allow more people to experience the games, which is cool. Yeah, they asked about that. We said we would ship out their copies at right at the beginning, so that way they can do that as soon as possible. And then once all the pre-orders go out, then we'll put it up on the website for a second chance sale, which should be within the next month. Like, expect November to get some Eagle Island Love 3 love.
Good deal. I've already got a for the second chance sale ad, the video ad that we're putting up for Eagle Island Twist and Love 3. I've already got it in my brain what I'm going to do. It's going to be funny. You'll see.
And that's the thing that people may have noticed too with premium is that we've upped our game when it comes to the marketing side. And we got one of our team members, Phil, he's been doing some crazy videos and having fun with it. And we're just doing whatever to have fun.
We're gamers, man. We just want to have fun.
No, we're not saying we're not dorks because, we're definitely.
Absolutely are.
But that's by design. Like, nothing is really off limits. We're going to have fun with it and, just show the passion and hopefully people see it. Maybe something will go viral and more people will find out that we have some amazing high quality games out there because that's the main thing is that reality is we want to make it so nobody can hold a candle to what we do.
That's right.
It's what's fun about it, dude. But yeah, so we got Raji, and then right after Raji, right in time for Halloween, is Sunshine Anthology.
Yes. Oh, dude. So good.
Finally.
I'm about to play through those two games again, because I said I'm writing the guide right now. I already played through those games, and, we're working with someone who already wrote a guide, an excellent guide, by the way.
Oh, the online guide, yeah.
Yes. Oh, it's so good, man. I'm putting it into a book and making it look all pretty, giving it the premium treatment. Yeah,
we'll have to get the developer on Video Game Bullshit and shoot the shit with Paul.
Yeah, like he seems like a cool guy.
Oh, we might be talking a lot of horror movies, scary movies, though, just so you know.
Okay, that's fine.
What I do. That's what I do with him. But it is a fun time. And then the thing is like doing those, and then I'm assuming we'll have a second chance for Switch Collector Volume 2 Part 2. We have some of the Gamers for Gamers releases that we haven't put up on the site, so Mighty Fight hasn't went up yet. But also, I don't even know if you knew this, but I worked on some slipcases for some games that I never worked on a slipcase for I did for the Gamers for Gamers. So cool. They Bleed Pixels has a Gamers for Gamers edition that I worked on. Very nice. Underling, I made a cool slipcase, which I feel like is almost cooler than the retail ones, both of them. And
offline, I've got a comment. Remind me I've got a comment about Wonderling. Just remind me offline.
Yeah, that's craziness. And I got a comment too about Eagle Island with you. It's super fun, super humbling. And, thanks to everybody for the podcast, though. Like, we're going to continue having fun with it. Next homework is Midnight Castle Succubus. safe for work, Tristan.
Safe for work.
Yes.
I'll make sure I have that.
Trust me. I'm sitting there playing this thing on my Steam Deck. And my daughter's in the room, and I'm just like feeling awkward. I'm like, do not look at this screen. Do not look at this screen. It looks gross. But I'm just not a big fan of that. I bet we'll get a lot of views on this one, though, because it's a horror game.
Mm-hmm.
Anti game.
Yeah.
It's just scenes or pictures or whatever. But
sure. Still. Yeah, it's whatever. But I mean, still, even dude, I felt awkward even playing. And it's not even like, hentai or whatever. Wife Quest. It's just anime, big boob, anime girls. And like my wife's sitting there giving me crap about playing it. I'm like, what? It's a fun game.
Wait till you turn that into the naked portions for Midnight Castle. Crazy. That's actually, that'll be a good comparison. Remind me, and we'll have to compare that game to how Wife Quest is to platformers, action platformers. Cause that's a Metroidvania. It'd be cool. Yeah. I think it's time to, wrap it up though, right?
Alrighty.
Yeah. So thanks everybody for listening. You can find us over at HagensAlley.com for this podcast, as well as where our books will be available. Mm-hmm. Tristan and I also have some books available at premiumeditiongames.com. That's where you can pick up Tristan's Video Game Console Collector's Field Guide, yes, which sir. Is the precursor to the Video Game Collector's Field Guide. Right. As well as the Switch Collector Volume 1, Volume 2 Part 1, and Volume 2 Part 2 that are up on the website, as well as a few other books. And then make sure you check out Raji's Second Chance are coming up, and we'll have a lot more treats and probably some Black Friday sales coming up too. Another thing is, I don't know if you knew this one, Tristan, but my old WordPress blog, I fixed all the errors, so it's actually available for the history.
Oh, wow.
So as I was answering some interview questions for old school gamers from other stuff, HagensAlley.wordpress.com actually works. It doesn't go to the store anymore. And my old blog with my old articles from when the Video Game Masters Club ended all the way up until when the Switch Collector was coming out are all now available, archived, all the old video game bullshit, Switch Collector, Switch Mania playcasts, and book logs and top tens are all there. So there's a ton, a big repository of like history from like 10, 15 years of history that's up there. Pretty cool. Thanks everybody for listening, and we're gonna talk, you know, hentai porn games with Tristan next time. And
stay tuned.
Okay, wonderful, everyone. See you next time.
Later, guys.